the Fermilab.
Thanks. So this is work that was done in collaboration with Neil Weiner, Itai Yavin, and Jia Liu, who's a grad student at NYU. And we were trying to look at what the implications of the Fermi line were for the LHC, in particular trying to broadly assess what classes of models can you look for at the LHC, and what kinds of searches should we be targeting. So Fermi sees evidence for a gamma ray line centered at 130 to 135 GeV. When looking at the galactic center, and so this is a plot of the photon spectrum. And the origin of the excess is still unclear. There are some possible issues with systematics associated with, if you look in the Earth-LIN data or in other data where you might not expect to see a line, you see some evidence of a feature. So it's not clear that this is new physics necessarily, or if it's even just a statistical fluke. However, for the purpose of this talk, we're going to assume that there is dark matter origin of this line, and what we say will simply generalize to any other lines that you see in this energy region. And you can do a fit to the cross section, and you find that when you take into account various astrophysical uncertainties, you get somewhere in the ballpark of 10 to the minus 28 to 10 to the minus 27 centimeters cubed per second. Now, this is a pretty strong cross-section for coupling dark matter to photons, considering that dark matter is dark, and it doesn't, we tend not to think of it as interacting with light. So we want to understand what the implications for physics at the weak scale are. And we can try to frame this in terms of an effective field theory. So we can write down higher dimensional operators that couple dark matter to photons. So just for the purpose of concreteness, I'm going to talk about the case where you have a pseudo-Dirac dark matter fermion singlet. And so you have dimension 5 coupling to a single photon, you have dimension 7 coupling to two photons. If you want to fit the observed cross-section from the Fermi line, and also with similar cross-sections you can account for the correct relic abundance, you're led to values of the cutoff and this effective field theory that are of the order of 500 GeV. However, it's a little bit deceptive because this is actually a loop process. And so when we take into account the fact that there are couplings and loops, suppression of it, it's actually more like the cutoff of the theory is more like 100 to 200 GeV. And so really, the LHC should be probing the ultraviolet theory. And so if we believe this to be true, you would naturally expect that a gamma ray line with weak scale cross section implies weak scale states that are accessible at the LHC. And so this is sort of an independent motivation for looking for new charged states beyond maybe SUSY or Du-Higgs doublet models. So because the effective field theory description breaks down, we need to pick a particular UV completion. We want to pick one that's simple enough that we understand what it's doing, but also is robust enough that you can try to take the results from it and apply it to lots of different models that have been written down, and there have been a lot of models. So in particular, I'm going to talk about a theory that's quite simple. You add in a new Dirac fermion and a complex scalar, and these carry electroweak quantum numbers. And then you just write down a simple Yukawa interaction. And this Yukawa interaction, if you you can write down loops that couple dark matter to photons, and these generate, for instance, the dimension 5 and dimension 7 operators that I wrote down earlier. And you can see that indeed the intuition we had about the cutoff shows up if we look at the dark matter to photon cross section, that if we want it in the range given by Fermi, then we see that we're driven to large couplings, large but still perturbative, but big, and masses that are in the range of 100 to 300 GeV. So we really should expect to see something new at the LHC. And of course, you can play games by enhancing things by making large representations of these fields so that you sort of have more things running in the loop. But this is sort of the general picture. So we're going to consider direct production of the charged states through electroweak gauge interactions. And so the phenomenology to some extent factorizes from the actual dark sector interaction. So what this means is that even though we're going to use this as an example model, the results should generalize pretty much to most other models that have these new charged states in them. Also, what's nice is that we have a fermion and a scalar, and the charges are not fixed. And so if we scan over all the possibilities of the different charges of these things, then we can, for instance, get the phenomenology that might also show up in a theory that just has scalars or something like that. So what we did is classify the scenarios according to the discrete symmetry under which dark matter is stabilized. So we want to make sure that we don't have dark matter decay. the electric gauge charges. And then what we basically do is consistent with these symmetries, you can write down interactions Lagrangian. We turn on one at a time so that we basically have one dominant decay mode. And obviously, by taking linear combinations of what we've looked at, you can sort of cover more complicated scenarios. And we focused on color singlet charge states just because once you have colored states, you also have couplings of dark matter to gluons. And this can be really dangerous from the perspective of monojet searches. So we considered three broad classes of models that that we scan over. So the first one is if you take the Z2 symmetry under which dark matter is odd and you make the scalar odd, then you can have the fermion decay directly into standard model states. And so this includes things that are like some vector like lepton that's heavier. And generally, the fermion decays to gauge or Higgs bosons plus a lepton. And the scalar, which is Z2 odd, decays into dark matter plus a lepton. So you end up with sort of slepton-like event topologies. Conversely, if you make the fermion odd under the Z2 symmetry, then the scalar can decay and mixes with the standard model. And so this incorporates things like extended Higgs sector models. And so generally, if you have something that's like an extended Higgs sector model, the scalar is going to decay through its Higgs mixing. The fermion is going to decay also through the mixing induced. So you'll get typically gauge boson plus dark matter. And remembering the dark matter is 130 GeV, this looks somewhat like electroweak Eno final states with neutralinos that are around 130 GeV. Now, in these scenarios, there are going to be strong constraints on the scalar VEV because the Yukawa interaction can mix dark matter and the charge field. And this can introduce all kinds of things like so depending on the gauge representation of the scalar VEV, you can have conflicts with electroweak precision. And it also opens up new annihilation channels that can violate photon continuum constraints. Then finally, is the possibility that there's something a little more complicated than that. So for instance, you can just have only the Yukawa interaction. And so the lightest components of these new fields are stable. And you have sort of a multi-component dark matter model. And finally, something where you have sort of a singlet sector that you can have other things decay into. So some of these are reminiscent of SUSY and two Higgs doublet models. And a lot of the searches for these things can apply to these scenarios. But we do end up with different gauge charges, different decay modes in some cases. And so it motivates us to think a little bit more broadly about when we're thinking about electroweak physics at the weak scale, what should we be looking for? And so for the gauge charges that we scanned over, we picked sort of more reasonable values, just because if you pick really weird gauge charges, then you forbid all renormalizable interactions, and you end up with long-lived particles that are already ruled out by charged massive particle searches, long-lived ones. So qualitatively, I don't have a lot of time to show results, but I can go over what kinds of models we found are constrained and what ones aren't. Nothing on this list should probably shock you, but if you have lots of decays to leptons and gauge bosons, then these are ruled out by multi-lepton searches quite definitively. Similarly, the higher the SU2 multiple, the larger the production cross-section generally, and these are also tend to be ruled out, whereas singlets tend to fall below, even if it's a SUSY-like topology, sometimes you fall below the constraints, and so they're not as strongly constrained. Tau final state, so if you decay a lot, taus, particularly two taus with missing energy, that's an extremely challenging signature to look for. Or if you're decaying to things with large QCD backgrounds, like BB bar or something, then these are very difficult. And then finally, scalars are less constrained because they have a lower production cross-section than fermions. So we summarize our results in tables like this. The dark bands are things that are already ruled out. And we show the bounds on both the fermions and the scalars for the cases where each one is odd. And then the light shaded regions are regions that we have done an analysis at 14 TeV, either a modification of existing multi-lepton search or a proposal for a new search that should be discoverable within 300 inverse sumpter bonds. So we see that a lot of the parameter space is covered, but we see that if you have SU2 singlets, particularly decaying to taus, or you have final states that are two taus plus missing energy, they're extremely challenging to see at the LHC. So this last table, just how we organized it, I didn't get into it, but some of these couplings have some flavor dependence just because if you're decaying into a lepton, you have to say which lepton you're decaying into. And so these ones are dependent on that, whereas the ones that are shown on this slide, typically arise more from like mixing and the Higgs potential, where you don't really end up with choices of what flavors you're coupling to. So I'm basically out of time. So I know that I didn't get a chance to go over very much, but I'm happy to answer questions. But this is more or less a summary of the things that I had covered in the qualitative results section. But we classify all of the different possible models that you can generate a Fermi line. We saw that the LHC probes a lot of them, but particularly if you have Talos with missing energy or disappearing charge tracks or these sort of more exotic signatures, it's going to be a real challenge to see them via LHC, and it might motivate strongly a linear collider, which can probe these things and probe pretty much the entire region of interest, and we can say definitively whether these new charge states exist or not. So thank you.
Questions or comments for Brian?
Yes.
So could you go back two slides?
Yes.
There's a lot of information here. Could you tell us how to read the top line on this slide?
The top line on the slide. OK. So we have on the left.
So black is excluded.
Sorry. So black is something that's not allowed by the Z2 symmetry. So for instance, if we have a Z2 odd scalar, then we don't want the scalar to be lighter than dark matter. Otherwise, dark matter will decay into it, and it's not dark matter. So that's the black. So the solid colored band, so for instance, on the top line, we have a doublet charge for the new fields with hypercharge a half. So this is kind of like a left.
And red there means it's not excluded, but you think it will be excluded at the 14 TeV?
So the solid, the dark color means that it is, the dark shading, it's already excluded. Okay. So here, it's already excluded all the way. And the reason is that you have the fermions decay into lepton plus W or Z. So you got four leptons. What the lower line, so that's for the fermion. But you could imagine, let's say I have a model where I don't have fermions, I just have the scalars. And then it wouldn't be the Z2 odd case. But you can separately bound the scalar.
That's right. And the green, the light green means it could be excluded at the 14 TeV.
That's right. So all of the light. So for instance, like this shading, it's something that's accessible and should be excluded.
Got it.
Sorry, okay. I didn't show up as well as I.
So you have some white regions
that
are below expectations. So that's a region that's not covered?
Yeah. So the white regions are regions that that are not going to be probed by either the searches that sort of extensions of current searches or the searches that we've discussed. Now, so for instance, you could take an example where.
Look at the top line, you got the white one right in between the black and the light blue.
Yes. So part of that is that you have. So in this case, you'll have a scalar that's sort of in the top line. Yeah. So you have a scalar, and that will decay to, let's say, a lepton plus dark matter. But when the scalar and the dark matter are too close together in mass, then you have a compressed spectrum. So that's where a lot of these bands between the black and the yellow.
So a lot of these models have, in fact, maybe all of these models have Landau poles at quite low scales.
Yes.
If I remember right, typically sort of around the TeV scale. So I wonder if you thought much about how that might manifest itself in signatures. It seems like there would be a lot of other physics not that far away, which may or may not be easier to look for than these light states, depending on how it's produced.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that is a somewhat model-dependent question. So I haven't looked too much at this myself, but I know that Itai Avin and Carlos Tamaraj, the postdoc at PI, have looked at higher-order corrections in the runnings of these couplings, and they find that at least at two loop, that there's some fixed point that they approach. And so you're not actually driven to a Landau pole necessarily right at the TeV scale. Now, part of the problem is that these are being done with large, at large coupling. And so, you know, in principle, you need to include all the higher loops. But it might not be that bad. So I agree that that is something that should be considered probably in the context of a lot of these models. But strictly speaking, there are probably games that you can play to deflect that trajectory and push it maybe to higher scale that we can't immediately see at the LHC. At least that would be my inclination.
OK, thanks.
Anybody else? Let's thank Brian again.
Thank you.